Chapter 63. The Robertson family survived 38 days at sea. Captain Bligh of the celebrated mutinous Bounty and his fellow castaways survived 47 days. Stephen Callahan survived 76. Owen Chase, whose account of the sinking of the whaling ship Essex by a whale inspired Herman Melville, survived 83 days at sea with two mates, interrupted by a one-week stay on an inhospitable island. The Bailey family survived 118 days. I have heard of a Korean merchant sailor named Poon, I believe, who survived the Pacific for 173 days in the 1950s. I survived 227 days. That's how long my trial lasted. Over 7 months. I kept myself busy. That was one key to my survival. On a lifeboat, even on a raft, there's always something that needs doing. An average day for me, if such a notion can be applied to a castaway, went like this. Sunrise to mid-morning. Wake up. Prayers. Breakfast for Richard Parker. General inspection of raft and lifeboat, with particular attention paid to all knots and ropes. Tending of solar stills. Wiping, inflating, topping off with water. Breakfast and inspection of food stores. Fishing and preparing of fish, if any caught. Gutting, cleaning, hanging of strips of flesh on lines to cure in the sun. Mid-morning to late afternoon. Prayers, light lunch. Rest and restful activities. Writing in diary, examining of scabs and sores, upkeeping of equipment, puttering about locker, observation and study of Richard Parker, picking at of turtle bones, etc. Late afternoon to early evening. Prayers. Fishing and preparing of fish. Tending of curing strips of flesh. Turning over, cutting away of putrid parts. Dinner preparations. Dinner for self and Richard Parker. Sunset. General inspection of raft and lifeboat, knots and ropes again. Collecting and safekeeping of distillate from solar stills. Storing of all foods and equipment. Arrangements for night, making of bed, safe storage on raft of flare in case of ship, and rain catcher in case of rain. Prayers. Night. Fitful sleeping. Prayers. Mornings were usually better than late afternoons, when the emptiness of time tended to make itself felt. Any number of events affected this routine. Rainfall at any time of the day or night stopped all other business. For as long as it fell, I held up the rain catchers and was feverishly occupied storing their catch. A turtle's visit was another major disruption. And Richard Parker, of course, was a regular disturbance. Accommodating him was a priority I could not neglect for an instant. He didn't have much of a routine beyond eating, drinking, and sleeping, but there were times when he stirred from his lethargy and rambled about his territory, making noises and being cranky. Thankfully, every time the sun and the sea quickly tired him, and he returned to beneath the tarpaulin, to lying on his side again, or flat on his stomach, his head on top of his crossed front legs. But there was more to my dealings with him than strict necessity. I also spent hours observing him because it was a distraction. A tiger is a fascinating animal at any time, and all the more so when it is your sole companion. At first, looking out for a ship was something I did all the time, compulsively. But after a few weeks, 5 or 6, I stopped doing it nearly entirely. And I survived because I made a point of forgetting. My story started on a calendar day, July 2, 1977, and ended on a calendar day, February 14, 1978. But in between, there was no calendar. I did not count the days or the weeks or the months. Time is an illusion that only makes us pant. I survived because I forgot even the very notion of time. What I remember are events and encounters and routines, markers that emerged here and there from the ocean of time and imprinted themselves on my memory. the smell of spent hand flare shells, and prayers at dawn, and the killing of turtles, and the biology of algae, for example, and many more. But I don't know if I can put them in order for you. My memories come in a jumble.